You're listening to Resolution Radio.
ResolutionRDO.com.
Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. In 1920, a few prescient white Americans and Europeans were awake to what was happening to our race. A racial war had begun against us, though very few were aware of it. We now face the year 2020, 100 years later. That war on us and the resistance against it have continued for a century. Where do we stand? What should we do? In 1920, the white man, to all appearances, was at the peak of his power, the highest ever point of his advancing knowledge of the real world, the zenith of his best mind's realism in abandoning the superstitions of the past, and standing upon the threshold of controlling his own future evolution through the new science of eugenics. And the white man ruled the world. The sun still never set on the British Empire in 1920. America and her Monroe Doctrine dominated two continents and beyond. European possessions spanned the globe, and white elites dominated many countries of mixed provenance. But there were cracks in the edifice. Jews had used popular Enlightenment ideas to establish themselves as legal equals in every white country they had colonized. Coupled with their long-established financial power and added to their heavy purchases in the growing mass media industry, including films, books, and newspapers, and soon to include electronic media, too, this allowed them to become the most powerful faction in white nation after white nation. And they would use their power everywhere to weaken and dilute the white majority, which they saw and still see as a competitor and a threat. In the United States, the massive immigration of Jews that began four decades earlier was still going on in 1920. They had already established their dominion over New York City, national publishing, and national politics. A Jewish defector, Benjamin H. Friedman, stated that a group of behind-the-scenes Jewish manipulators, to which he himself belonged, controlled President Woodrow Wilson like a poodle on a string. Friedman said that, quote, President Woodrow Wilson was just as incompetent when it came to determining what was going on as a newborn baby, close quote. By manipulating Wilson, Jews had, by 1920, gained the ability to control America's money through central banking, and had plunged America into World War I for Zionist objectives. They were in the full flush of their power by 1913, in fact, when they launched a massive national PR campaign, bigger than anything ever seen before, led by the Jewish-owned New York Times and Jewish advertising executive Albert Lasker. The purpose of the campaign was to exonerate Leo Frank, the Jewish sex killer of a 13-year-old white girl. Frank just happened to also be the Atlanta, Georgia president of the B'nai B'rith. This campaign is still going on today. By 1920, Jewish communists, helped by Jewish Wall Street, had taken over a major European country, Russia. The Russian Revolution was anything but Russian. Within 2 decades, tens of millions of white Europeans would be killed by communism. By the 1950s, the toll would exceed 50 million dead white people at the hands of Jewish Bolshevism, and tens of millions more would languish in the hellish Soviet gulags for thinking wrongly. For some reason or other, there is no Holocaust Memorial Museum for these millions of murdered white men, women, and children. No national holidays, no docudramas, no required teaching in schools, no distinguished fellows or chairs in studies of the genocidal massacres of white people by Jews.
If 10 states made it a felony to read the New York Times, the media would run the story 24/7 until Congress fixed the assault on the First Amendment. But when 10 states criminalized the Second Amendment, the media says nothing. They don't report that honest, well-meaning people, nurses, stay-at-home moms, veterans, even a disaster relief worker, have been charged with felonies for simply having a lawfully owned firearm. Each was legally licensed to carry a firearm in their home state, but arrested and charged as criminals when safely carrying it through another, less free state. When states can deny one constitutional freedom, they can criminalize the entire Bill of Rights. On behalf of America's 100 million gun owners, we will fight until the full measure of our Second Amendment freedom is restored to every citizen in every corner of the land. We are the National Rifle Association of America, and we're freedom's safest place.
Katie Armour raised the standard. Finally, AR-500 Steel Core Body Armor that comfortably conforms to the chest and torso. Unique design distributes weight, feeling lighter, increases mobility, and lessens fatigue. Introducing the Combat Quad Bend CQB, a revolutionary plate forming process that caters to the end user. The CQB is an industry game changer, a must-have for the ladies. Available now, only at katiearmour.com, C-A-T-I-Armour.com. Come and take it.
Is there a count somewhere?
You're listening to Resolution Radio.
ResolutionRDO.com.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey Purified Water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size for incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency. Get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
Greetings, fellow white people. Nazi propaganda bot here. Have you visited NordicResistanceMovement.org yet? If not, why? Are you an English cigarette? At NordicResistanceMovement.org, you will find the latest and the greatest regarding the movement and the Nordic people's struggle. Activist reports with action from the streets. Ideological articles to stimulate your mind. Videos, interviews, radio and more. From the week gone by you will find an article written by Simon Lindbergh himself. He wrote about our vision for a united North Contra-Kalergistan EU. We also published Simon Holmquist's article called The Psychology of Genocide, which details how whites have been tricked into hating themselves and need to wake up to the glory of their ancestry. So you think this sounds nice? You want some of this? Then head on over to NordicResistanceMovement.org and get your daily dose of National Socialist stimulus.
By 1970, 50 years later, Jews had so consolidated their power over the United States that a leading theologian, Billy Graham, and the then President of the United States, Richard Nixon, in a private conversation that by a happy combination of circumstances happened to be recorded, would both acknowledge the toxic nature of Jewish influence, but be powerless to act against it, and fear to even say anything about it publicly. My friend, Dr. Revelo P. Oliver of the University of Illinois, surveyed the situation just before the halfway point of this century of war and resistance, and he concluded in 1969 that all conservative approaches had failed and were doomed to fail. When the culture distorter has captured the culture, when those who want you dead control all major political parties, all major media outlets, and almost all academic positions, you have nothing left to conserve. What is left? Dr. Oliver asked, and then answered, only the biological fact of race, the yet discernible vestiges of our culture, and the yet fresh memories of what we were not long ago. Those are all that we have left from which to create, if we can, a new nation to replace what we lost. This is correct thinking, and advanced thinking even in 2019. It is astonishingly advanced thinking for 1969 when Dr. Oliver spoke those words. You gain nothing by pretending that those social institutions are still yours when they are not. You gain nothing by pretending that the police and military forces arrayed against you are yours. You gain nothing, and in fact cause irreparable harm, by serving the geopolitical interests of those who have captured your government. You must become revolutionaries. You must bypass or shatter existing institutions and make them anew. The time servers and sellouts and conscious enemies who constitute the old elite must be swept from our presence forever. We must constitute a new elite. A daunting goal, perhaps, but the only goal that makes sense. Dr. Oliver made his assessment as part of a promotional film, After 50 Years, for the National Youth Alliance, the predecessor of today's National Alliance. The book the Youth Alliance chose to inspire young people was Francis Parker Yockey's Flawed but Powerful Imperium, which is today still available from our Cosmotheist bookstore. As we approach 2020, much has changed. Today, unlike in 1920 or 1970, it is no longer possible to convince 99% of white Americans that this is still their country. The Jews who control the mass media, enraged by the small resurgence of white populists and traditionalists that got Trump elected, and doubly enraged by the appearance of more and more racial nationalists on social media, and overplaying their hand as usual, have gotten their daggers out, and their anti-white agenda is becoming obvious to everyone. The passing of the great race, the replacement of whites, is now openly celebrated by Jewish culture distorters and their functionaries, even as the third worlders they have empowered, like the Squad, are starting to smart in and complain about the Jewish yoke. Today, unlike in 1920 and in 1970, the Jewish power structure and its employees have begun the process of openly demonizing and dehumanizing the adherents of the only philosophy that can free us, white nationalism. They deplatform and dox and scheme to deny us not only our voices, but interfere with our families, deny us the ability to engage in commerce, and soon even deny us the simple necessities of life. And all of this is visible, open now. They move inexorably to exercising the power of life and death over us that they exercised in the Soviet Union, the purposeful starvation, the bullet in the back of the head, the knock at midnight, the fake trials, the execution chambers and gulags of the NKVD. What do you think Antifa is, after all? Just a plausibly deniable army of thugs and killers, as is obvious to everyone, or a first step to one that need not be denied? Many, many whites, even whites who are afraid to commit at this time, are intelligent enough to see these developments and understand them. Today, unlike in 1970, and for the very first time, the World War II generation that was so emotionally invested in fighting Hitler is no longer a major social force. New generations of young whites are arising for whom Hitler and National Socialism are not evil, are not demons, but are instead great symbols and avatars of opposition to the degeneracy and evil and anti-white genocide they see all around them. Today, we have much more than Imperium. We have the great example of what Yaki in that book called the hero of the Second World War, Adolf Hitler, and his titanic, even mythic struggle, not yet finished, despite his martyrdom against the enemies of life. We have that great example shining in front of us, and shining before the new generations of our folk more than ever now, as the tired myths promoted by our enemies deservedly and inevitably expire. We have the life's work of Revelo Oliver, the greatest of which he created after 1970, after the age of 62, when he renounced conservatism and Christianity, fully endorsed racial nationalism, and promoted the National Alliance and National Socialism. We have one of the greatest books of the 20th century, Which Way, Western Man, by thinker and philosopher and National Alliance member William Gailey Simpson. We have the life's work of the founder of the National Alliance, Dr. William Luther Pierce, whose leadership had just barely begun in 1970. Dr. Pierce relentlessly wrote and organized and broadcast his works to the world until his death in 2002. And Will Williams, the current chairman of the Alliance, has dedicated his life to not only preserving these works, but to vividly and repeatedly promoting them and making them available again and again, week after week, year after year, to new generations of our people. Today, unlike in 1920 and in 1970, we have the ability to propagate our message to millions of our people via nationalvanguard.org and our other outlets. It's been a long time since our pages were visited fewer than a million times per month. We and other racial nationalists, many of them awakened and inspired by our work, have been so successful in doing this that the Jewish power structure is desperate to shut down our media operations by any means, fair or foul. This, of course, is proof that they know our truthful message resonates with the healthy segment of our people. If you add to our readership the dozens of other sites in tune with us with a like or larger audience, and the hundreds upon hundreds of others with a smaller but still significant audience, the white nationalist audience is surely in the multiple millions now. No wonder Trump's handlers pandered to us to help him get elected. The hundreds of thousands of young white people who read our words are making themselves known. They have been censored, delisted, banned, and shadow banned again and again and again. Yet, on Twitter alone, they still number in six figures by my estimate, and are growing by the day. Young people who know that Pierce and Rockwell and Simpson and Oliver and Hitler will be the saints of the future and its architects. As one wag put it, the only question is, how tall will their statues be? It is true that the hundreds of thousands who read our words have mostly been free riders. Most have not joined us or sent donations. Some are doubtlessly intimidated by what the Jews have done to ruin the lives of conscious whites. To those of you who are in that category, let me say two things. One, there is great safety in numbers. When 250,000 people are supporting the National Alliance instead of just reading our words, we will be strong enough to be a social force that few will want to tangle with, legally or otherwise. Then the fence sitters will leave the fence in droves, and a 250,000 will be just the beginning. They won't have enough corrupt U.S. attorneys or jails to make much of a dent in our numbers or our morale then. In fact, by then, we might have more than a few prosecutors on our side, as well as leaders in every field of our society. When these people see that someone's finally doing something. Two. It is, using cryptocurrency, which is not hard to use, quite possible to support our efforts with perfect anonymity. Even we won't be able to know who you are unless you want us to. Another reason for the free riders is, I think, a psychological peculiarity of white people. Despite our great propensity for free thought and individual innovation, we are a deeply law-abiding people who respect authority and hierarchy. We need psychological permission from a leader before engaging in warlike acts, or in going against convention, or in going against powerful interest groups. But once that psychological permission is obtained, no one is a stronger or better fighter and conqueror and destroyer of his enemies than the awakened white man. We need to position ourselves as worthy, and actually be worthy, of leadership. We need to be excellent in everything we do. We need flawless logic and sterling character. We need authenticity and honor. We need the authority that comes from knowledge and truthfulness. We need the moral authority that comes from wisdom and from right living that will be an example to all who see it. We need to be unforgiving and totally dedicated to stamping out each and every threat to our people's existence forever. We need relentless effort that never tires, never quits. We need to engage the authorities of our society and publicly challenge their corruption. Most of all, we need to be strong, for no one and nothing in nature respects the weak. As William Pierce said, the National Alliance needs to embody a society in the making, embody with excellence every function needed to assume societal leadership when the time is ripe. Have we done that yet? No. Are we ready to take on such in-depth leadership of our society now? No. No one is. But when the hundreds of thousands see that we are serious about doing exactly that, our cause, in the words of Dr. Oliver, will move forward with the gathering momentum of an avalanche.
You're listening to Resolution Radio.
Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Thanks for listening to Project Schoolyard Volume 2. For more information about the project, as well as lyric to the songs on this CD, please visit www.tightrope.cc. You can also find jokes, news articles, a photo gallery, free CD downloads, and a secure online shopping cart. We carry a full line of flags, t-shirts, CDs, books, stickers, and other products of interest to racially conscious white people. Please visit www.tightrope.cc.
This is a fascinating look at one of the most lied about periods in the history of mankind. In keeping with our motto, free movies, free minds, free speech, I ask that you watch, you decide. A statement made by UndergroundDocumentaries.com in 2013.
The only untold story of World War II you will ever need to know.
You have done a magnificent job. The visual impact that people will experience when they see what you have produced. You've been very impartial in your presentation, and you have allowed the people, the viewers, to make up their own mind. You present the evidence, and anyway, it's an honor to have you on the program.
I want to say that the work that Dennis Wise has undertaken and accomplished, and the value of this work, cannot be underestimated at this time, especially. He has undertaken to present actual information about the most controversial period in human history. We have been given a narrative that has painted a picture, an image for the world to consume. And we have to look at this. The reason this is so important this time for everyone to look at is we have to challenge the lies. Okay, that's one thing right there, just from a moral standpoint. In our time today, it is more than that, just a morality. It is a matter of physical survival itself, because we have to look at this period and look at exactly what happened, which Dennis Wise has presented to us in his great accomplishment that he has put together there. We have to look at what happened. Who had power in 1945? It was Stalin, Churchill, and Roosevelt. And what did they do with this power? As again illustrated in his great work, The Greatest Story Never Told. Yes, if you want to see the dangers that are facing the world today, just watch this film. One can see the actual facts, indisputable facts, of what really happened at that time.
To find out more on this phenomenal documentary series on Adolf Hitler and World War II, go to thegreateststorynevertold.tv.
My brothers, my sisters, I bring you a message of solidarity, a call to action, and a demand for adherence to duty of an Aryan resurgence and ultimately total Aryan victory. We have broken the chains of Jewish thought. We know not the meaning of the word mine, it is ours. Our race, the totality of our people, 10 hearts, one beat. 100 hearts, one beat. 10,000 hearts, one beat. We are born to fight and to die and to continue the flow of our people. Onward we will go, onward to the stars, high above the mud of yellow, black, and brown. So kinsmen, duty calls. The future is now. If months from now you have not yet fully committed yourself to the Alliance, then you have in effect not only betrayed your race, you have betrayed yourself. So stand up like men and drive the enemy into the sea. Stand up like men and swear a sacred oath upon the green graves of our sires that you will reclaim what our forefathers discovered, explored, conquered, settled, built, and died for. Stand up like men and reclaim our soil. Kinsmen, arise. Look towards the stars and proclaim our destiny. Defeat never, victory forever.
I believe in race. I'm not ashamed to admit it at all. And that doesn't mean one bit that I'm out to persecute or hurt any man because of his race. He can't help what race he is. We believe that each race has particular geniuses and particular faults. The white race has built white Western civilization, and we think the white race should dominate in that area. National socialism fundamentally is the application of science not only to inanimate objects and animals, but to mankind himself. We believe that the communists, the Marxists, have one fatal error in their doctrine, a place where absolutely there's a hole and there's no explanation for it. They admit evolution. They admit that animals vary by breed and that you can breed better and worse animals. Now, how do they explain how there is a sudden dividing line when you come to one particular animal called man? They have no explanation. Time and again, when I've asked them, they have no explanation. They just say, if it's got two legs and it stands on its hind feet, then it suddenly becomes a special being and there is absolute equality. They're all the same. Man is an animal just like all the rest of the animals. He's more intelligent, but he must obey nature's laws. And that insofar as he is an animal, he must obey the laws that pertain to animals. We say that when the white race has produced such a wonderful thing as Western civilization, we should treasure the people that have produced that and can maintain it. And we should not mix them all up with other kinds of civilizations, whether or not they're good. We should certainly try to preserve it just the way the farmer preserves his better grade of stock. We are also, socially speaking, tribalists. You must live as social beings. You have to live with other people. And this is impossible unless you observe certain fundamental laws of the tribe, the ancient Indian tribe, any kind of tribe of people, even a wolf pack, has got to have certain fundamental things. One of these things is leadership. Not leadership by the most popular, but by the strongest and the best. Any tribe or Indian tribe or any group or family should be led by the best and the strongest. Otherwise, it disintegrates. It's got to have group pride and loyalty. You've got to have selection in the mating process, something that we have almost lost now. We believe that it is of fundamental importance to society that the strongest, cleverest, and the best of the men mate with the best type of women who will make good mothers. And when you destroy that machinery, you get what we have now. We believe that you have got to have an organic society. Now, by an organic society, we mean a society, not a dictatorship, but a society in which the parts of the society cooperate together in different functions and in peace and harmony, just the way your body works. Cancer is the wild, uncontrolled growth of cells at the expense of all the rest of the body, and that's what you have in Washington, D.C. right now. Cancer. We believe in private property and free enterprise. It is impossible, we believe, to have a society in which there is any real work going on unless people can get the reward of their effort. And at the same time, we believe you've got to have social justice. You cannot have people who are exploiting and squeezing little helpless people economically. And this is where I get in trouble with the conservatives, because most of today's conservatives, I've discovered, are reactionaries. They're real anxious to hold on to their money. They don't care how they have to figure it out. They just want those money bags. And they come up with any kind of rationale to keep it. Every national socialist believes in idealism, believes in something that is worth more than his own one single human life. He's willing to die for something. When you're ready to die for something, then you're alive. And until you are ready to die for something, you have no real fanaticism. And just at dinner a little while ago with some of the fellows there, they say, were telling me, well, it's terrible to be a fanatic. Well, did you ever stop and think how this country got here? How all the great inventions ever got there? Any one of you out there that is not a fanatic on something or other, whatever it is you're studying, if you're going to be a doctor, be a fanatical doctor. Otherwise, you'll be nothing. You'll just be an ordinary old chug-chugging guy, and when you die, nobody will notice it. But if you're a fanatic, you'll produce something great. You'll create. Creativity is fanaticism. Every creative genius has had to be a fanatic. Many of them have been burned at the stake. So we are ideological and idealistic fanatics. Just like the communists, by the way. In between the Nazis and the communists is the great mass of non-fanatics. The TV watchers and the comic book readers. I will say this. National socialism is the inevitable end product, logically, of evolution. If you believe in evolution, you've got to be a Nazi if you think about it long enough. You can't help it. But what happens is people short-circuit it. The minute they believe in evolution and scientific breeding until they come to that two-legged animal that stands up on its hind legs, then all the rules are up. We say that's not possible. You either believe in the scientific method and the truth, and you apply it to yourself without egotism, or else you don't believe in the scientific method and you're kidding yourself. Nazis believe in ruthless application of the truth, not only to inanimate matter and animals, but to you animals. People, all of us, are the same insofar as we are animals and must survive and live as animals. And unless we breed ourselves better, we're going to get worse. That's what's happening. I do worship nature in that I'm humble. When I see the mighty, awesome power of nature, and believe me, I've seen some terrific power of nature, the typhoons off Japan during the war, earthquakes. I've been through some tremendous cataclysms on this earth. And compared to them, the atomic bomb is like a firecracker, nothing. And when you start to think of the enormity of space, our spacemen are just going around at the very bottom levels of space. They're no place yet. There are over 100 million planets where life, just like here, could exist. And in the face of that awesome probability, not possibility, probability, I say it's ridiculous to be egocentric and say we are the center of all things. Everything turns around us. We Nazis are humble. When I look at nature and realize how ignorant and small and feeble and weak and little we are, Nazism is a philosophy of nature, a way of looking at the world. And as I've pointed out, we believe in tribalism. We don't think we're above that. We think that you've got to have pride in your family, pride in your race, pride in your nation. That's not something to laugh at. Patriotism and pride in family and pride in race is something we should be proud of and cultivate, work on, not get rid of. Finally, we believe in morals. We believe in the traditions of goodness, virtue. Now, I told you something about what we are, but I'll do as good as I can in telling you what I think our enemies are. And our enemies, make no mistake about it, are the Marxists. The philosophy of Marxism, I believe, is the enemy of all humanity. It's the reverse of humanity. We say communism itself is the most vicious, anti-social doctrine the world has ever known, and here's why. They completely deny the very basis on which any human order can exist at all. Without humans, or at least without civilized humans, you certainly can't have human order. And the communists say they don't believe in race. They believe in absolute equality. The pygmies, the aborigines of Australia, everybody. Send them and let them all come to Carlton, and they'll all write arias and books, and the cannibals will be producing the music and verses. That's all you have to do is educate them. And this simply is not true. This results in chaos, social chaos, which is what we have now. They don't believe in enterprise. They don't believe that people should work for themselves. They believe that the state should come and tell them what to do. They don't believe in private property. They don't believe that you can keep the fruits of your production. They don't have, above all, they have no spiritual ideal. We say the only thing that's worth protecting with your life is ideals and your family, your race, and your nation. And twice in my lifetime, I've been called upon to go out and risk getting killed. And I saw a lot of other young men doing this. Young fanatics that they made out of it, by the way. They made us real fanatic haters of the Germans and fanatic haters of the Japanese. Nobody protested that was bad to be a fanatic when we were fighting those Japs, and I assure you, we all were. Finally, the communists, if you remember when they first got into Russia, they are against morals. They had free love, no morals at all, everything was have a ball. And the result was they almost tore Russia to pieces, they just fell apart. Now, if you'll notice, they are almost puritanical in Russia. In order to make the thing work, they've had to go back to the very principles of tribalism which we're advocating. You can't work society with a communist pipe dream. Civilization is based on self-sacrifice, on the willingness of men to go out and die for what they believe in. When you get rid of that self-sacrifice, you get anarchy. Civilization is built because I am willing to give up something for my family. And the family is willing to give up something in order to have the town succeed. And the town is willing to give up something so the state can be in business. And the state is willing to give up something so the nation can succeed. Self-sacrifice is the first principle of civilization. Communism has got the fanaticism to destroy you, and it's doing it. And unless you can build up a counter-fanaticism for something you believe in positively, you will be destroyed. You are being destroyed.
Recently, there was a report out that among new babies that were born, this happened last year, minorities were now the majority, that whites were officially the minority.
And they're boasting about it. Khrushchev just said, America's so liberal, they'll never fight. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, but we're going to change that. It won't be quite so liberal. After we've had a chance to make America understand what it is and make it conscious of itself and its greatness and its people, and the white race understand that they're worthy of protecting themselves, that they don't have to keep humbling and downgrading themselves while other races are standing up and saying, look at us, how great we are. We keep saying we're ashamed of ourselves for being white. That's a terrible thing. The thing for each race to do is be proud of itself. And the white people and the good people of this country, when they finally realize that they can do that without hurting or being obnoxious to anybody else, they will finally become fanatics to survive, to keep this great country going.